went on the private train. And that's when the Lockharts met on that
Gene
trip.
And Kathleen.
And then June became very famous afterward. Say, it's kind of chilly here. Do you mind setting that? It must be right open on my back.
I don't know if that's
Is it a ventilator or is it
It's a ventilator.
Well, I haven't got my coat down yet.
Want me to go get it?
Yes, I think it better.
Okay.
Did I bring you the key?
Or is this any better over here? Try here.
Maybe that'll be better.
Try here.
Because it's right.
Get those cords out.
Be careful.
Right. There you go.
Attention.
I'll go get your coat too, just in case.
Maybe it's a good idea because
I got the key.
When a lot of people get in.
I've got the keys.
You have the key. Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
And a man can make a shift flank, you know. So-and-so's in there, and he's just talking terrible about you. Roosevelt said, that's funny. I don't remember having done anything for him. Good evening.
So
I'm all ready.
You could come.
Yes.
Hello. My wife. This is
I'm happy to know
Joe
you.
McKee. My name's Elwood McKee.
I always feel, you know, my mother came from Springfield. She was a Douglas, and I was always in Chicago. But they talk about woman's lib. She and her best friend Stevenson, Douglas and Stevenson, came up here to write on the newspapers about the labor unions.
Oh, right.
And a big German was the head of it, and he told them to go to the best restaurant and sign his name. And she said they had the life of, you know. Mm-hmm. These kids, though, but people don't know that.
No, they don't.
No, no. They don't.
They think everything just happened yesterday.
Well, that's the way it is.
But I always kind of
felt
that.
Our children are coming home nowadays. You know how they
recycle?
And they're telling me about this great song that they have just heard, you know. And I said, your grandmother sang it.
Well, thank God that they have something good to come back with. There are many things that are good.
Yes. As long as you don't tell them that they
But listen,
like
they don't, they teach them the verbs, but they don't know how to talk.
Yes, that's
they
true.
Go to Spain, they go to France, they go to Italy, and they can't speak to anybody.
And they can't speak English when they're at home.
Yes. But I mean, what's the use of learning the verbs? Just the verbs. Dead from the neck. That's where I see so many things, really.
And they really, I think sometimes they do realize it when they get to be about 25 or 30. Then, you know, they have lost so much.
Well, the libraries have to make publicity. They don't read anymore.
Oh, of course not.
And if you refer to something, they look like you go, oh, my God, where would we be without Dickens and Thackeray and everybody?
Mm-hmm.
My mother was wonderful. She said, let her read anything she wants, or she'll form her own taste. So nothing was forbidden.
Thank heavens that was with us, and we've done that with ours.
Well, that's the only wise way.
Because they gradually come back. And
little by little, they say, this is pretty good, yeah, you know?
If you leave enough books around.
Yeah, but let them get used to reading. Not believing everything. I think the television here is a crime. I get 21 and then I stay on 21. But really, you see, in Italy, you get 20 minutes of ads twice a day. But you get a real thing. You get all the American plays. I saw A Cat on a Hot Tin Roof with Anna Magnani was excellent and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And you get operas and that. And then you get 5 minutes of ads. And they're funny. They get good artists.
Oh, some of them are funny.
They're really good. But this year is, I just turned on 21, thank for God, for 21. This is this is like a rinascimento.
When did you come back from Italy? You've been living
well, I've been back since 71. I lost my husband, you see, he passed away. And he was so much younger than I was. And you hear everybody talk about your age. He said, you were born before I was, so what? And none of his friends or anything made anything. I never was conscious of it. And I come here, they said, you know, she's not, you know, like I had a something against you or something. He said, you were born before I was, so what?
So
And you took part in a lot of tone tests?
Yes, oh boy, I went all over the country. It took the place of the Chautauquas that the people had missed so. And it was a thing for the people to get together. Mm-hmm. It was good.
Did you generally sing in unison with the phonograph or in harmony?
No, I sang some of the, and then I went off, slipped off the stage and they didn't know whether I was on the stage or not. Mm-hmm.
Yes. When you were singing, were you singing in unison with the recorded voice or harmony with the recorded voice?
Just in unison.
Unison. I've read that most of the time it was in unison.
Yes, in unison.
Did they give you instructions to try and adjust your voice to be the same volume as the voice?
No, they didn't. After a while, they knew that I knew and I was all right with all over. Mm-hmm. It was a good way to see the country. And it was interesting. I was telling somebody about, I went campaigning with Roosevelt and we had a private train, you know, like we did with Charlie Edison. And so this man came and said, you know, Frank, and so-and-so, then they're just talking terrible about you. And Roosevelt said, that's funny. I don't remember having done anything for you. We had a lovely trip when we went with Charlie Edison. And Jean and Kathleen Lockhart met on that trip. Mm-hmm. And Jean was the child from that notice. Oh, we had a nice trip.
You know, Charles Edison still goes to work, Theodore Edison still goes to work every day.
Oh, yeah, sure. Theodore, is that another son?
Yeah, Theodore. That was the one that went to MIT. He was an engineer. Oh, yeah, he's still there.
But you know, nobody knows that Alva's Thomas Alva Edison, see? And when I was up in Seattle, I met a girl named Alva. I said, that's a funny name for a girl up here. She said, well, you know, my father was a great friend of Edison. He said if he had a boy, it would be Tom. And if he had a girl, it would be Alva, like Edison's mother. Mm-hmm. Mexican. And nobody knows that. Think what that would... Oh, thank
Should
you so much.
On your
yeah, I think it would. I imagine what that would mean to the Mexicans. But nobody knows that. And the Alva is an odd name, you know.
Sure is.
Yes. I'm spreading my knowledge around. But I think the one of Roosevelt's wonderful. I don't mean Roosevelt, I mean yes,
yeah,
Roosevelt.
Franklin.
Do they initially give instructions about trying to control your voice to be the same volume as the phonograph voice or anything
oh,
like that?
Oh, no. Well, I had all that in the audition, mm-hmm. you know, like, and then no more.
You mean in the tone test?
Yes.
In the tone test.
Did they have you sing natural or?
Natural, perfectly natural. And mm-hmm. then go off the stage. Mm-hmm. And the lights, it was very, very interesting.
Did you try to match the same volume as the...
I didn't pay any attention. I did the best I could.
And just sang?
Yeah, just sang.
Okay. Just worry about it. Just
because if you do that, you get all tightened up and you're no good.
Yeah.
I've got some cute memoirs here of the people at the Metropolitan, and I was Puccini and Guzzipecce and Toscanini were all cellists. You know, they studied the cello, so they said, let's play some. Oh, he said they were terrible. So my goodness.
You have these records on tape?
Yes.
Difficult.
I have
and
all.
And you know, half the people don't know about Mary Garland.
Sides, actually,
I'm
going to
start off with her because she's the first woman impresario in the country. And I'm going to tell about how she got her start, which is just out of this world. She's from Chicago, you know. And the people, and she was studying in Paris, and she's sitting in the bar alone, she was crying. And this woman next to her said, what's the matter,
Tone Test Records.
And the woman was Peebles Sanderson, for whom Massenet had written Manimal.
And they were all just putting the catalog in there.
She said, well, I'm going to be put out there, stop sending the money, and I don't know what to do, and I can't pay for my rent. Oh, she said, don't you worry about it, you just come with me, you live in my home. And you come down to the opera, I'll take you all the records, whatever.
Especially because they just had piano.
So, she did. And the first night of Louise, the prima donna got cold feet and ran out of the theater. They said, my God, what are we doing? And they said, well, there's that girl who's been to all rehearsals. Let's put the Queen Lazure comes at the beginning of the second
night. The Ben Bolt was done in the fall of 19.
And put her out there and she made a hit in the theater. But I mean, it's the hand of God.
They were all made after her contest.
Well, I really think I people that don't believe I feel sorry for them because the biggest things in your life can only happen through some miracle.
The records were made that were used during the contest, of course.
Right.
And I think she's the first impresario.
This March 1920.
That we've had in the country.
Yeah.
They don't even
remember
the
garden.
And most of the records are made after April 1920.
Yeah. And I said my husband was 15 years younger than I was.
The first one was made when she first joined the Met.
Yes,
here they tell them about everybody's age.
The second was a year later.
Who cares?
Melba had it. You know, took
a little
tour in Preston.
Did you bring your record?
Oh, I just sent Tim up after it.
And Melba?
Does it have a paper label?
No.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yes, she had
their black label.
They were not permanent companies.
These were all
companies
to
Australia,
New Zealand, Canada, or Australia, or something.
On tour.
Name Melly.
Oh yes.
They wanted to have them in the store.
Dino Borgioli and John Brown.
Yeah, and I was saying they don't talk about those John Charles Thomas, Orville Harold, those singers.
I have more too.
You know, they only know what happened the day before yesterday.
Ray,
don't even have the
and the movie,
Ray
people,
Wilde
the movie
has
picture
some
people. They know all about that.
That's right.
There they go.
Didn't have a Mark contest in the book. These are not Mark contests.
A couple were.
We have never tried to.
I think that's what capital.
No.
But they.
The ones that I have.
But little by little, they realize this is a lot of fun. But they're not so dumb.
We let them.
Well, that's what my mother said. Let her read anything she can read. And little by little, I think that's what's written because of
the ones where you see the brown.
The other, it was,
you can see a trace in the
son.
How old is he?
He's 23.
Oh,
he was looking through.
You had a son, I had to look at her to be sure that she's such a
record.
You know, my husband is so much younger now. He said, you bought me for it. So what? But here, that's all you hear about people's age.
When the boy came to
you
his,
have a large collection of diamond discs? Of diamond discs?
Not a
and
large.
Spring home.
I have the Ada Jones
and Louise Holmes.
That's my particular
match. Oh, that they just from Stop and
Mark. I have all of hers. I have not.
Isn't that lovely? Oh, that's a beautiful record. You see, Al McCook was a pupil of my teacher's, and I'm telling how he got our, he invited Toscanini to dinner. And in the middle of the dinner, the bell rang, and he said, oh my God, what could it be at this time? And he went, oh no, and Toscanini said, who is that? Oh, it says a pupil, you want to be, well, he said, that's no way to treat a pupil. What is it, my dear, he says, and he sits down and plays for her. And she does the whole thing of Lucia, which is one more. He said, well, this girl's wonderful, see? And that was the entry to get to the Metropolitan and have an audition.
That was quite a lot.
That was quite Italian.
It's got a rough edge.
But I was very fortunate. Very fortunate. You see, my maestro came here first to the Chicago Musical College. He had written a story in the newspaper about himself, and Verdi laughed so that when Ziegler, I think, was the head of the Chicago Musical College, wrote and asked for the teacher, he recommended Maestro, and that's how Gucci Becher came here. And he didn't understand Chicago. You can imagine those days, the folding bed, he almost got caught in it and everything. And he said he told the maid to put the tremble in the middle of the floor. And he comes in, there's a chamber pot in the middle of the floor. But I always feel like, you see, my mother came from Springfield, and she was a Douglas, and I always feel like she was always hearing about Chicago. And then, and did I tell you the two girls came to write about the labor union here?
Yes.
Imagine. That's before I was even dreamt of.
People don't hear it. Nowadays, it doesn't mean it the way that, at that time.
You have any other
it's kind of sad.
Unusual diamond discs such as your long play
that made God.
I have just, I think, one or two long play.
Sure.
One is damaged. I just kept it as a.
Do you know if any of the other ones got out that were made but not
the
issued? They made about 50
publicity.
There were a couple that slipped out various ways, I think.
And then they said they got to happen, that anything that happened
when I was at the site
is important.
That were experimental.
Where would we be if we didn't have anything?
And there were a couple of experimental 12-inch discs.
See, my maestro wrote this article, and Verdi laughed so much that when Chicago asked him to recommend a teacher, he recommended maestro because he had liked this article. But maestro said, what kind of an article is this? Can you sing an aria or anything, you know, making fun?
There were workers there that would take pressings and they...
No, that's before I was ever heard of, because he was, here, and then he went to New York. And anyway, he went to New York because Chicago then was over. It wasn't so hot now. And I think somebody took him to New York. But Chicago was, you can imagine, formidable. But I notice the girls, they study it, they know all the verbs and they don't know how to talk them. He was from Milan. I was in Rome all the time. I've been all over, but I mean, still. I found there's a lovely wives of professors in Madison who are Italian. One from Taranto, one from Pisa. The head librarian of all, I think she's from Pisa. The head of the French, she's from Siena. And we meet once a week and speak Italian. It really is awful nice. And one girl's name is Portia. And everybody's so surprised. I said, don't you know anything about the Merchant of Venice? I've never heard about it. Well, they wake up a little bit, but only a little bit. But when I was a kid, we used to pay a boy 50 cents to go to the Metropolitan when the door opened and stand there and stay there until I could, for standing room.
I used to work in New York City.
So you know.
And I used to leave work and run up there at 5 o'clock, I was in 42nd Street, run up to the opera, stand in line.
That was it. Well, that's what I used to pay the boy to do, you see. He'd put his overcoat on the rail, and then I could get down from 100, because I went to 100 College. Are you a New Yorker?
Yes.
Oh, I am, too.
Well, then I used to stand in line, stand at the opera, and then have to go
by
the train. I'd get
there
at 1 o'clock,
have
to go to 6 o'clock, and
then go back to work. But you thought nothing of it? Oh, no. And the way I first went, we found tickets in the snow. We went to the Empire Theater for something, bought at it, and in the snow we found tickets for Nozze di Figaro. And it was Ames and Farrar and Sembrich and Scotti. And oh, it was wonderful. And Ames, you know how beautiful she was. So somebody told me she put books on her head. That's how she walked. So I was going around with books on my head all the time while I walked that way. But New York's a wonderful city that way. There's so many things for free. People don't know. Oh, there's so much. And LaGuardia was such a wonderful mayor. I used to campaign for him. He was wonderful. He was like a good housekeeper, you know. He was all over the place. This has to be fixed. And girls would come to the Institute of Musical Art and they'd pass Pergolesi and everything. Good evening.
Would you very much mind an autograph?
Oh, I'd be happy. Here?
Well, I don't think so.
Oh, here. And your name? Or the name's up here.
No, that's your name.
Oh, well, all I...
I don't even have a pen.
I usually have a pen, but I didn't...
Oh,
come on. They say, give me a point of leverage and I can lift the world.
I don't think you have the right point.
Got
you
it.
Open it for
Bill's
me.
Got
you woke
it.
You came.
Oh, that's right. Yours is a decent pen, too.
I just use his prices.
Can I put good wishes?
I wish you would.
The one that he sold for $19 a couple of years ago.
There
Thank
we
you
are.
Very much, and I appreciate it.
Oh,
I wish
happy
I had the other two that you'd made, but haven't been so favored yet, I'm afraid.
Well, I went to a Christmas party, and the day that we had the one in Madison, this girl had taken it out. And here was my Tosti liquor. She had it, she played on Christmas Day. It's such a sweet thing. There are nice.
I think we'll go ahead and start anyway so we don't hold up the other meeting. So does everyone have one of the white handouts? If not, we have some more up here. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to present Metropolitan Mezzo-Soprano, Concert and Recital Singer, Edison Recording Star, and Edison Tone Test Artist, Miss Cecil Arden.
There we are. Well, this is quite a treat. You know, when I come to Chicago, I can talk loud enough. When I come to Chicago, I always seem like home, folks, because my mother came from Springfield. And when they talk about women's lib today, my mother, who was a Douglas, and her best friend, who was a Stevenson, these two girls came to Chicago to write on the newspapers about the unions. And that was one of the first unions, in the country, here in Chicago. So they weren't so far behind the times by any means. Now that's the one point.
They ended up in New York.
Well, yeah, they both ended up in New York, but they were just kids then.
And you were born in New York?
I'm a New Yorker, born and bred.
What procedure will follow is I'll keep kibitzing.
Yeah, that's good.
So that we kind of, I want to hold to the events in Cecil's life. I also want to open the floor that if something comes to you and you want to ask as we go along.
By all means,
we'll,
do.
We'll do that in case there's never any time at the end, you know. But I may write hurt on that too. If you get out a favorite axe to grind, it may take too long. So I'll keep steering. I'll be the moderator with your permission.
But I want to tell you about Mary Garden, because Mary Garden was the first woman impresario in this country. But the way she got her start is not as an impresario, but as an artist, is it really very interesting. She was from Chicago, and people had been paying for her lessons, and she was living in Paris. And she went in the Bois de Boulogne, and she's sitting there crying. And this woman next to her said, "Well, what's the matter, my dear?" "Oh," she said, I can't pay my rent, and I'm going to be put out, and I can't pay for my singing lessons anymore. The money has stopped." The woman said, "Now, don't you worry at all. You just come with me." And the woman was Sybil Sanderson, the sweetheart of Massenet, for whom he wrote Manon. So she took her to home with her. She said, "You can come to all the rehearsals, so don't worry." So when they were putting on Louise, and she came to all the rehearsals, the prima donna got cold feet after the first act, and she ran out of the theater, and they said, "My God, what'll we do? What'll we do?" They said, "Well, that girl's been here all the time. Let's put the costume on her. Let's try." She goes out, and she sings the Puy le Jour, and she's made. It's just like a fairy tale, isn't it?
Tell them why you got such an attraction for opera. Tell them about when you were a little girl with
your mother. Well, now I'm a New Yorker, you see, and we went to the Empire Theater, which is across from the old Metropolitan. And in the snow, we found tickets to go to the opera. Well, we'd never been to the opera. I mean, that was something way, way beyond us. But we went, and it was Ames and, wonderful artists in the Nozze di Figaro. And I never saw anything so beautiful as Ames, and I was just entranced. So somebody told me that she walked so beautifully because she had practiced with books on her head. So I was going all around with books on my head, see if I couldn't learn to walk the way she walked.
And after that, you went to see a lot of operas.
Well, then
you gave the nickel to them.
No, but what we used to do, you see, I went to Hunter College, which is a teacher's college in New York, and we give a boy 50 cents to go to the Metropolitan as soon as the doors open, and then pay for his standing room. Then he'd go and put his overcoat there. Then I could come along, and then I'd have to pay again. It was hard. It was hard, the financial business. But just the same, there I had a place on the rail, you see? And that was wonderful, because they were very particular about that. Everybody, that's my place, my book there, my coat.
Tell them how you found Maestro.
That was
when they saw the article in the paper, and you found he lived right behind you.
Oh, my maestro was the teacher of Al McGlook, and Al McGlook maybe was about the first American trained in America to make a good debut, see? And he had Toscanini for dinner one night, and he said, at a certain hour you come. So the bell rang, and he said, oh, what can that be? Well, he said, it's a girl, and she, oh, no, no, no. He said, well, Toscanini said, that's no way to treat anybody. That's awful. Come here, my dear. And so he sat down and played for her, Lucia. And, of course, she had it all perfect. She knew. He said, well, bring this girl down to the opera and let us try her out there, you see. You see the fine Italian hand.
Then how did you discover where Maestro lived?
That I don't remember.
But where did he live?
He lived directly on 60. Oh, when Alma Gill came out, she was such a success. But I didn't have brains enough just to write her a letter and ask her who her teacher was. But little by little, the name came, who it was. And the searching, and nobody knew who he was. And, oh, I didn't have brains enough to go to the opera and ask there or anything. So he lived right on 67th Street, and from his window he could wave to me on 68th Street when I finally found out where he was.
And he helped you learn Italian?
Helped me. I went to the Berlitz, and so I tried to speak Italian, and as soon as he saw I was really sincere and wanted to speak, he spoke nothing but Italian to me, which was wonderful, because this is interesting. At the opera, we go to Philadelphia once a week. So when we were in the train, we were talking about the different librettos of the different operas. And then there was a girl named Alma Talley from Kansas City. She came with a great splurge of publicity. I think her father was on the Kansas City Star, and it was a big, big to-do. And so we were talking about the different librettos. And she was on the train. She said, my goodness, said, if I'd known there was anything like that, I never would have wanted to sing in Rigoletto. Can you imagine?
Tell them when you wanted to speak to Caruso backstage in Italian. And
oh, I was scared to death. But he was such a lovely, lovely man. When he was going to marry the girl he married, he went to her father, who was a big banker. And the father talked money, 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 money. He said, I didn't want to buy your daughter. I wanted to marry her.
Bill, would you show the first slide? This is when you were...
Lovely. Altri Tempi.
Tell them about then. This is about 1917 or 18. Mm-hmm.
But I never have cut my hair. Because why should everybody be alike? You know?
From her work at the opera, being a young American artist, she was 25 when she made her debut there with...
with Caruso and Farrar in L'Odoletta, opera of Mascagni.
Then you could speak to him.
Yeah, I tried. But from that time on, I realized how terribly important it was. And of course, it was wonderful when I went to Rome and I could speak, you know. But you know, some of the girls know the verbs, but they don't know how to talk.
And then Edison approached her to make a test recording. And on page 5, I have listed, take a little time to tell them about the sheets that they have here. I've listed the records she made for Edison. The first, as you see, was in 1917, the year of her debut. And it was the Habanera from Carmen, mm-hmm. which was not issued. And as far as we can determine from searching all the dusty corners at the site, we can't find a print of it anywhere.
I guess it wasn't too hot.
Well, but 2 years later, after she had done her consistent opera work and she had done a lot of recital and solo singing, Edison approached her again and she made the recording of Ben Bolt.
That was fun.
And
nobody here even knows, ever heard of Ben Bolt,
yes, they
I bet.
Have. they could sing you a chorus, probably. Let me tell you about the appendices I've given you on pages 6 through 11. These are Xeroxes of the actual cash books kept by Rabenstein in the New York recording studio. On the left-hand side is the day of the month, and on the right-hand side is the amount the artist was paid for that recording. The matrix numbers are listed here, so if you want to know the exact recording date of any particular matrix, this is it.
Wonderful.
If you haven't seen the cash books before, and on page 6, the second column, you'll see Cecil's on the 31st of October, Halloween Day.
Yeah.
That's her 5863 matrix of the Habanera, for which she got $25 and the orchestra got $26.
Before 802.
The artist was paid in cash the day of the recording, and that was it. There was no royalties for most of the artists. You might notice just above there, Gladys Rice made a record on the same day. Gladys is still living at the age of 88, and she was at our West Orange meeting, you remember, in 77. On the next page, 7, you'll find Cecil's recording of Ben Bolt. The code number 189 is her Edison number, and so whenever she records, that's the cash amount number. The $25 is crossed out on that day because they pay her for several later. They were apparently deciding whether they're going to pay her all in a lump or one by one.
Yes. Big business.
On page 8, in the first column on the 27th, you see her and, was it Robert Gaylor, the pianist?
Yes, yeah, I think it was Gaylor.
Those are the two Tosti numbers, Mattonada and Could I. These matrices were never used. They were remade. These were takes A, B, and C, and they don't exist. Just parenthetically, while we're on that page, there's on the 26th, you see Torquem Bazazian made some records. He was Edna White's husband at the time. Edna's still with us. Elizabeth Lennox is right below Cecil's entry. She made a record on the same day. She is living still in Connecticut. Helen Davis on the 28th married Victor Young, and Mrs. Young is still living. And Anna Case on the 30th, Anna is still living, not in good health. Page 9, you'll see the Il Segreto, which we'll hear in a minute. Right underneath that is Vaughn DeLeith. That was her first recording.
Oh, I remember. She was a member of our club, man.
Yeah. That was her first In the Land of Old Black Joe, which was issued only on Blue Amberole and not ever the disc. However, there is a test pressing of this at the site. So if you want a better copy than your Blue Amberole, get the disc. On the next page, you'll see the M.O. On the 19th, which means made over. They didn't like the results of the In the Wax, so they made over Mattonada and Could I on the 19th. Right above that is the Green Brother Orchestra. Lou Green is still living right here in Arlington Heights in Chicago. And Cecil was finally paid for all these dates on the next column on page 10. She got $145. Wow.
Oh, it was nice. Believe me, it was nice.
And her last records were done on June 6, 1920, on page 11, with Moskowitz on the violin.
Oh, yes. Sing, that's, smile, and slumber.
And the ye who have yearned along.
Yeah. Right.
As a little appendage on the end, I put a copy of her tone test contract. I thought you might like to see the ins and outs of that. You can use that at your own discretion. Right now, let's listen to Cecil back in 1920 doing the Il Segreto.
Shall I sit down?
Sure, sit down and rest while we listen. Thanks, Mike, for helping here.
El segreto per essere felice, no per trovare l'impegno al limite, si assereno, si annoblio il cielo, ogni tempo sia caldo, sia gelo. Oh.
My maestro was a great friend of Puccini's, and Puccini and Toscanini and maestro were all cellists. So they said one night, let's try to play. Oh, he said they were terrible. They said they'd never heard anything so terrible. And Puccini, the Life of Bohème came out as a book in Paris, and it was a great success. And they were in an old armory that had been abandoned, and they had one gas jet, and they had the piano under it, and every now and then they'd cook eggs in the gas jet, and they'd overflow and go into the piano. So they said, and Puccini said, why should we think about Paris? We have our Vita Bohème right here. And that's when they did that, you know.
When you did the Edison records, you'll notice that most of them have been done after the date of the tone test contract. And tell them a little bit about the trips you made with the tone test.
Those were really barnstorming days, but they were wonderful because sometimes I met people whom I've become friends through the years. And then I met others that although the trains used to go through and you'd get an early train, there was no diner on or anything, that you'd smell the coffee cooking and everything, and they wouldn't even offer you a cup of coffee before you left, knowing there was no diner on the train, not caring.
Somebody asked...
But not many of them. No, they were just a few.
Somebody asked Cecil if they had to sing any special way for the tone tests, and what was your answer?
No. It's just natural. The more natural you are, the better the test.
And they turned the lights out?
Yes.
And? Yes.
That didn't work.
Oh, they were wonderful. The dealers were really marvelous. They had practiced everything beforehand, not like Toscanini and Buzzi Peccia and Puccini. They were all cellists, you see. So one day they said, "Let's play." Oh, he said they were terrible. They said, "We'll never play. Get a job in an orchestra or anything else."
But all of your tone tests worked.
Yes, yeah. They were. It was a lovely thing.
Tell them that the trip you took with Charles Edison.
Oh, that was a beautiful. Oh, that was deluxe. Twice I've been on a private train. That was once, and then with Roosevelt campaigning. And the one with Edison was lovely.
Where all did you go that time?
We went to Chicago, to Vancouver, and let me see, and in the middle.
New Orleans?
No, we didn't go to New Orleans.
San Francisco.
But San Francisco, and then Chicago, that lovely theater. Oh, it was nice, and I had a new Paris dress, I remember, and oh, it was lovely.
One of the things that she used on the tone test was the Ye Who Have Yearned, which you might recognize, but none but the lonely heart.
Nur wer die Sehnsucht kennt.
Let's listen to that.
Did I do it in English, I think?
Yes.
Yeah. Fine manager we have.
Cecil sang with no big chest tone down, you know, none of the rejoice, oh Judah, kind of thing, which was her maestro's teaching. She followed him well. There's so many mezzos shifted into that grainy voice. Yeah, and you, I just want to make a parenthetical note that this is the take B you were listening to. Take C was also issued on the 80572, but there is an ensemble lag. And the violinist and pianist couldn't quite feel what Cecil was going to do.
Was that Moskowitz?
Yeah, and Gaylor. And there's a little scramble at one point, but for some reason they had to use that take at one time. So there is a take C available at the site, but take B is much, much better. I'm going to kind of take you through some more of your life routine, and then you can do what else you want to do at the end. We'll give them a chance for questions. Why did you come back and tell us why you resigned from the Metropolitan Opera? They must have thought you were out of your mind.
Well, I did what a great many people do. I fell in love with a painter in Paris, an American. And I gave up everything, changed everything, went. And then I began to realize what the man was really like. He was one of those people who find a wonderful little place to eat where the coachman or something went. But if anybody was entertaining, he'd go to Prunier's or anything like that. And one day, a great big box came like this, and I thought, well, thank God he's done something, you see. And he said, I'll open it. And he said, oh, they're from Ed Brown. I thought it looked like him. And then my heart just went down to my boots. Because he was one of those people that, you know, take but never give. So I was very lucky.
So you...
Because I would have been a hell of a life.
But then you discovered something different in Italy, didn't you?
Oh, yes. I had a one. It was, my husband was much younger than I was. He said, what's all this talk about? You were born before I was, so what? You see, here you hear she's 6 months older than he is or something. And everybody's so hell-bent on age. What difference does it make? Either you can get along or you can't.
Let's show them the picture of Cecil in Paris. This I took off a French postcard. It was not one of those.
Listen, but I now...
not one of those, but the other.
But I now have it in my possession because I gave it to my accompanist when I left New York, and he passed away. So I've got it in the little apartment I have there in Madison, and all the art experts have been... Because the man who did it was an Italian who got the gold medal that year in Paris. Which is very rare. They very seldom give it to a stranger, you know. They usually give it to a Frenchman. And it's a very, very good one. So here's the, in this little apartment I have there in Madison, here's this big painting. That's it. It's very good.
That's how you looked too when you saw Lindbergh do his...
Oh, I'll never forget that. He flew right around the Place de la Concorde and dropped an American flag all around it right in the middle. Oh, I get the chills when I think about it.
And Bill, the next slide shows a favorite man of yours in Rome.
Who's that? Ardito.
Ardito.
Oh, yeah, he said, you're born before I was born before you were, so what?
He was a naval officer?
Yes, he was in the Navy, and he said right out of the Naval Academy into 15 years of war, because they were sent to Africa and everything. And every time he'd go out someplace, one of his sailors would have a little bistro someplace. So we must have champagne, we must celebrate, you know. Because they had tough times in Africa with, you know, Mussolini and all that. But coming out of the Naval Academy, that was you had to do it. No choice.
The next picture is incorrectly listed on page 4. The secretary should have typed 78, and she hit the 9 button instead. I'm sure you realize we haven't quite hit October 79. And a nice sharp eye over here caught that to help us. So you can, on page 4, change 79 to 78. And you want to, I skipped Mr. Gucci.
Well, if you skip, that's all
no,
right.
No, he's here. Tell them about it. This was at Monte...
Oh, in Monte Cattini. That's the Gucci store that's here. And they have a beautiful store in Florence. And he was, oh, he was lovely. The whole family were lovely. That was the one, I have shoes made. I got them on the same shoemaker that makes for the Pope. You know, and for Monte Cattini.
Yeah. Then last October, when I met Cecil for the first time through David Givannoni.
This was Madison.
At the Music Hall in Madison. And that brings us up to the present. And I'd like to have Cecil sing for us a couple of the Tosti numbers that she used. Why don't you sit down and we'll listen to them.
All right.
The Could I, and then we'll do the Mattinata. And you can be thinking of questions you'd like to ask her.
But imagine at Christmas, a girl took it down, and at her Christmas party, she played these records. I was dumbfounded. Says, that's a nice record, if I do say so myself. I asked her during those high notes, which made your ears go a little bit, whether she had to do anything in the studio. Back up.
There was no mic blast, but there was groove blast, I suppose.
Oh, I thought did I tell them about the cellist?
Yes.
Yeah, I told them about...
You didn't tell them about how Butzi Petscher happened to come to this country.
No, this is very interesting. Ziegler was the head of the musical college of music here, and he wrote to Verdi and asked him to recommend a teacher. And Otello had just been put on a few nights before, and my maestro had written, he said, what kind of an opera is this, no aria for the tenor and all that? And Verdi liked it so much, he laughed so much, that he recommended him to come to Chicago.
Was that the father of Flo Ziegfeld?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And then when he went to New York, you see, he had all these letters to Ziegfeld, and Ziegfeld brought Anna Held, and maestro didn't know who Anna Held was. So he said, well, he said, she's all right for light opera or something, but you never do for opera. And here she was the star of the town, you know, in light opera. He didn't know that. And I had a thing. Did I tell you about them having the Vie de Bohème?
Yes.
Yeah, I did tell you that.
How about Gatti?
But Gatti one day was going to the opera, and he sees all these police, and he said, my God, what's happened? You know, he was in a cab. And it seemed they were putting on a Russian opera for the first time, and every Russian in New York was trying to get in the door. And then he was married to Frances Alda. And so when the war was over, she knew Pershing, and through Pershing's influence, she got all her beautiful furniture from Paris, had it all brought to New York, everything fixed beautiful in Aldwyn Hall on 58th Street. And then she invited Gatti, said to come. And what did he think he did? He said, my God, such low ceilings. She said she could have killed him. Furniture meant nothing to him.
Are there any questions you'd like to ask of Cecil about the Metropolitan or the tone tests or the recordings? Yes.
I noticed in the notes here that you were your own manager.
Yes, I had to be because, you know, it was a very tough time at that time. You had to have a lot of money to get in with any of the big ones. And the little ones, they take I hate to talk about Dima Harshberger here, but really, everybody must know her, I guess. I had a contract with her, and when it came back, the railroad tickets I had taken off, and she said, oh, well, just from Chicago. And here I had paid to come from New York, you know. So I didn't like that so much.
As your own manager, how did you feel about the records?
I was delighted to make the records. The Edison for me was like a god, you know.
Did you pursue making more?
No, I never made any after that. Then I went to Paris, you see, and then everything changed. Right. The life kind of broke. I had this one day. I did tell you about the policeman Gatti sees all the policemen at the opera, and there was a Russian opera for the first time.
Tell him about the Toscanini doing the German opera.
Oh, and so towards the end, when Toscanini first came, the orchestra was all German, see? And he's going to conduct Tristan. So the men said, now we'll have Tristan and Risotto. He said, but there's an error there. Oh, they said it couldn't be. We've been playing for 20 years. Nevertheless, there's an error. And so they pulled back.
Are there any other questions you have? Did you have another one? Okay. Yes.
I would appreciate very much hearing about the problems and perhaps even joys about acoustical recordings, the situation of the vocalist and the orchestra.
Oh, it was nice. There was such nice feeling at the Edison place. Everybody helped everybody else. And if it didn't go, you did it over again.
Did you sing How Close to the Horn? I'm really trying to visualize the physical setting.
Yeah, this distance.
About an arm's length.
Arm's length. And then when it's a very high note, you back up a little because otherwise it scratches you. At least that's the way I remember.
Do they help you back up the right amount?
Oh, they do everything. They're wonderful.
Did you have to stand on a box or was it at the right
note? No. A regular... studio for that.
How big around was the horn that you sang it to?
Well, just normal. Just a,
about so?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
not a big...
No.
Not small.
No, a medium. Medium. And it wasn't a big to-do, you know. It was very simple and nice.
Was the orchestra arranged behind you on various levels or all on the flat?
No, various levels.
Various levels.
Yeah. And I had something else I was going to... Oh, did I tell about... about the furniture she bring in?
Yes,
yeah. Because I don't want to repeat myself, but I've stuck these things
Michael
down.
Michael has a question, too.
Now, of course, you worked for Edison, which has the reputation of having had the best for vocal recordings, acoustic recordings.
No doubt about it.
Now, there are very few of us around who could ever say that we heard Caruso, let alone sang with Caruso.
Yes.
But now, of course, Caruso recorded for Victor.
Yes.
Could you tell us how you feel his Victor recordings sound in relation to the way you really remember having heard him in the flesh?
Well, they're good. They took all the pains in the world with him, you see, because his records, he did my maestro's Lolita, and he came in with a check that he, at that time, there was no law whereby the composers got anything, royalties on records, just before ASCAP. He came in with a check for $70,000 that he had gotten from Lolita. And of that, he brought Maestro a beautiful present and all that, but Maestro didn't get a penny. Now we have ASCAP, which is the Association of Musicians and all, and they get your royalty, you see. But then you didn't. Did I tell
it? Did Caruso's voice on the Vicar?
Oh, everything was perfect.
Did the recorded voice sound pretty close to his voice?
Oh, yes, yes.
Do you think he would have sounded on Edison the same
way? It would have
way?
Been nice, though, if he had made an Edison record.
Uh-huh.
Because we could judge then, you see. Because they took all the pains in the world with him, you can imagine, you know. But he was a darling. When he was going to get marry his wife, he went to her father to talk to her, and her father was a banker, and the father talked money. He said, I didn't want to buy your daughter. I wanted to marry her.
Can you tell us something about some of the women in that club you founded?
Oh, yes, I must tell you about that, because the men have the Dutch Street Club, Alexander Walcott, everybody belonged to. So we started The Woman Pays. Now, she's supposed to earn her bread and butter in the arts. We know about the bread, we're not so sure about the butter. But we had Pearl Buck. And, oh, I can't begin to tell you, so many, and I got in because, and I was about one of the few musicians, they were usually writers.
You mentioned Vonda Leith was in it.
Vonda Leith was in all the time. Oh, she was wonderful. And what's his name? Kathleen Lockhart, and Jean, they make the records and all, Jean Lockhart. And June is the kid now.
June is
but
the
she
crowd.
Were, they, and oh, we had a lovely, lovely crowd.
He was a songwriter too, wasn't
yes,
he?
Yes, he did a lot of things. And we had, and Pearl Buck, Pearl Buck has a foundation to which I subscribe, and I think a lot of people should, because she said that these children in Japan and all, they look at you with these American eyes. And you know that, you know, the soldiers, after all, they were made whoopee all over the place. And she did, she started a foundation for them because nobody did anything for them. The Japs and the Koreans and all, they wanted nothing to do with them, and the whites in them. And she said, they look at you with this little American face, you know.
Tell them what Hearst did when Davies came to the club.
Oh, that was wonderful. We met where was that place?
Algonquin.
The Algonquin, which had a nice room, but not a big room. And Marion Davis was going to be the guest of honor, so we invited her. And my God, he didn't know it was a little room like that, and he sent Paul Whiteman's band to play for her. And you couldn't hear yourself think.
Anything else? Yes.
Did I tell him about the orchestra, the risotto?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
He has a question for you. Yeah.
Perhaps did you hear the Caruso records that they fed through this computer process? Are they more realistic than?
Nothing could be more realistic than when you really heard him, you know.
But by comparison, do they sound even more like you?
Well, I wouldn't be a good judge because I was so crazy about his voice and all. I remember I was in an opera with Geraldine Farrar and Caruso. It was called L'Odoletta, an opera by Mascagni. about Dutch, like the little Dutch shoes. And really, if Geraldine said they ought to call it Flamin instead of Loaded Letter, I don't have hardly anything to do in comparison. And he was a lovely person to deal with. Lovely. Very modest.
Farrar was a nice lady.
And Geraldine was a darling. Yes, she certainly was. She always brought sugar for the horses, you know. And when she was in Zaza, the little girl who did the child's part was a chorus man's daughter, and of course had nothing. And she went to Bess and got the loveliest dress possible for this kid. Mm-hmm. They'd never seen such a dress as that, you know. She was a lovely person.
Michael has another question.
When did you do your broadcast? They say here for Bambergers. I assume that was WOR in Newark?
Yes, yes.
When was that?
Well, about the same time. Maybe about a year, about
1921.
About 21 or so. And Bambergers had a place on to make the records on Broadway someplace. I forget where it was now. And that boy was the head of it. I forget his name now.
That was a Sunday morning series.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know, what's his name? Popoli. I can't think of his first name. Jack Popoli.
No.
He was at WOR, one of the engineers.
No. You know, you never met anybody, you never knew their names or anything, because you do your work, as it were, and then you go.
They were in another room.
And they were in another room, I mean. Yeah. But the trip that I had, the Edison trip, that was a wonderful trip. I had a trip with Edison and his wife, and Charlie, you know. And we went, we had a wonderful time there. And then I had another trip to electioneer for Roosevelt and Franklin D. So when one man came back, he said, you know, Frank, so-and-so's up there and it's just awful the way he's talking about you. He said, that's funny. I don't remember having done anything for him.
I think as our parting
How
song.
About did I say about the risotto? Did
yes,
I do anything?
Yeah. I think for the parting song, we'll use the mattinata of Tosti, which was a favorite one on the tone test. Wasn't
it's a lovely one.
And it's a great song. So let's listen to that.
Yeah. From yonder as you
hear Cecil as a concert artist again. The Scratch is World War One vinyl. Okay. I want to thank Mike and Bill for helping with us, and also Leah Burt, who made all of these things available to us from the site. She's a wonderful lady. And thank you again,
Cecil. Do you know that I wrote to the Postmaster General, and I said, why don't we have an Edison stamp? And I got a reply, like they send to 1,000 people. It just, you know, made me so mad. because we ought to have an Edison stamp, my goodness.
Yeah, without his name on it, though. Yes. I don't know if they're doing something for the light or not.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
Well, it's high time.
Dick Sears has kindly consented to do his session at 9, and we are trying to make it fairly close on time, but I'm sure Cecil would be glad to greet you if you want to come up and say hi while we pick
or
up.
Or any questions.
Cup,
or anything.
Up tapes and pictures and
things.
Did
I tell the one about the risotto?
Yes. Thank you, Dove, so much. Stand up.
Thank you.